Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And here we are back again after an unbelievable weekend of rugby and so much good stuff to talk about in very, very difficult and challenging times. The three of us are here as ever, as we are 52 weeks of the year, the longest running rugby podcast, the only rugby podcast that never misses a week.
Ever.
And for, as it turned out, as Phil pointed out last week, a listener let us know, in our eighth season, not our seventh season. Nevertheless, our feed still says season seven, but
yes.
There you go.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that when we launch our Patreon, which we breaking news next week or the week after, when we sort out some small technical issues, we've already given you a whole series for free.
Yeah.
A whole series for free.
Yeah.
Which is the Mystery Series 8, which we don't know where that is.
Yeah.
But also, we have missed a week. We missed a week around 7 years ago. We took one off for Christmas.
Did we?
Yeah, so that's like a super rare. That is a super rare collector's edition now. So I reckon when people start signing up for the Patreon, the first thing we should do is give that episode away to whoever it is that signs it first.
Yes.
The DVD of the missing episode.
Our missing episode.
DVD. No, that's ridiculous. A vinyl.
Our missing episode. Our missing episode will be there. Do you know what else? If I could find some very, very old files on a computer or a hard drive somewhere of our early episodes and some of the bits that I used to edit out.
No.
Because this, what you're hearing right now is, as we record it, no longer editing takes place, but I used to spend more time editing than we did actually recording.
So we did that in the old XFM studios. Now, obviously,
correct.
You left.
Oh, sorry, just very quickly. That's JB.
Hello.
Phil is in the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container. How are you doing, Phil?
Hello, very good, very good. Thank you, Tim.
Good. Sorry, JB, continue. Yes, yep. We did used to do the show in the XFM studio.
No doubt there'll be a baffled maintenance engineer who goes in, who went into that studio maybe a year after you left, and like, what on earth are these files ramblings about Thomas Waldron?
So that there's these things, we call them hotkeys in radio studios. It's like a cart wall is another word. Basically, it's where you keep all your sound effects. So you have the one
screen.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no, the thing's not up. Yeah, that, exactly. So buttons that you can press that make certain noises. What did I used to use that sound effect for again?
Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. So, anyway, I had all the ones from my XFM breakfast show and all the regular features that I used to do on the show. And I remember one time my boss just saying, just going through people's cart walls and stuff. I can't remember who it was, but he was like, who is Thomas Waldron and why do you have a song about him? Or, it was Alex Corbisiero. Why have you got a guy? Why are you rapping about a guy called Alex Corbisiero?
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you indeed? Firstly, should we just say, what an amazing weekend of rugby.
It finally sort of kicked off, didn't it? It finally ignited.
Yeah, there's a few things to get excited about, not least a 96-point match, but also the game today was, while not always the best not always the best skill set on show, it was a hell of a game to watch. It was a great spectacle.
Yeah, yeah. Weirdly, the rugby was so good. I mean, why it was good, it's so competitive. I think it's a couple of teams that won that'll be a little bit more worried. just their performance rather than the result, because everyone seems to have played well. Every losing team, as far as I can see, there's a lot to be proud of and a lot to be built on. For some of the winning teams, their performance, well, the only positive they can take out of it was the win.
Anyone in particular?
We'll go into it later.
Yes. And I think there's one or two teams that would think that was not a positive performance, and they also lost, so we will get into that as well. But there is some rugby news knocking around. And one breaking bit of news just before we came on the podcast, it appears the much-vaunted Alex Sanderson, who as soon as Steve Diamond left his role at Sale Sharks was the fans' choice, and he was one of the favourites. He's been made director of rugby.
Yeah, this is a massive relief. I'm not going to lie, this is a massive, massive relief.
For the neutrals.
For all neutrals out there, this is really good news, because I do think that Newcastle are playing very well, but ultimately their existence as a Premiership club is at best precarious. I don't mean this year, I don't mean right now, I mean in general, since their existence. Leeds no longer exist. So Sale really are the club which fly that northern flag, where the majority of the players are actually from. And I think it's so important that Sale went out and got someone from this area of the country. I think Sanderson's from Lancaster, is he not?
He's from the northwest, certainly. Somewhere.
Preston, yeah, Lancaster, somewhere.
This is Phil, no, this is your patch, Phil.
Well, I know he went to Kirkham Grammar School. I'm not sure where he was born, but I know he played, obviously, for Sale for a good few years, played for the early part of his career for Sale.
Yeah. So, I mean, Sale could have gone down a whole different road. They could have gone a South African coach, an Australian coach, someone not from the area, local clubs for local people. But, like, they went and got Sanderson. He is the right guy. Now, I want to broaden this discussion out a little bit in a minute about, you know, who is qualified to be a DOR, who isn't. Because I shared some thoughts about this with Phil early on this week. But, yeah, I'm really, really happy that Sale have gone down this road. It sort of cements the club's identity.
Well, much as, like, in football, there are tracksuit managers and there are suit managers and stuff, and there are guys who are more like Harry Redknapp, who'll get his team of coaches and then do a bit of wheeler dealing.
Yeah.
Although I wouldn't say that to his face, because remember the time that an interviewer did, someone said, you know, a bit of a wheeler dealer. I'm not an effing wheeler dealer. I'm a football manager, and then stormed off. But I think Sanderson will be more of a hands-on coaching DOR, won't he?
I would have thought so.
But he's more like a head coach than a DOR, actually. In fact, is he head coach or DOR?
That's a good question. I don't know. Rugby Pass are reporting this now, so we're going off of that. Now, I'd have to read the article, but I would be amazed if he would go for anything less than DOR with full control.
Yeah.
So he's on the Rugby Pass article, he's listed as going as director of rugby.
Yeah.
Which, for me, it is interesting. Obviously, Sale no longer have a director of rugby, but we've seen former players and former coaches take up director of rugby roles for the first time, to certainly mixed successes in the past few years. And it's, as I see it, it's a very different skill set, or the role can be carved as a very different skill set from the coaching role. We know that Sanderson is a good coach. We know he's been part of that Saracen, that's incredibly successful Saracen setup. But does he have the right skills to translate to DOR?
That's another, a big question. It's another young English coach in a DOR role. Paul Gustard, Steve Borthwick, Alex Sanderson now. Who else? Stuart Hooper.
Yeah. Hoops. Andy Farrell, if you want to go across the water and count Ireland.
Yeah.
He's a relatively young former Saracen.
It seems to be the Skivington trend. Skivington as well, there you go.
With a young coaching group too. Here is my thoughts on these appointments in general. So, as Phil likes to refer to quite often, the Peter Principle. Which is promoted to your point of incompetence. Is that
promoted to a level above your incompetence?
Okay.
So, business, you see this in businesses all the time. People get a promotion, They were amazing at the job they did, get a promotion to a high level. They can't do it, and they end up getting bombed out of the business rather than celebrated and maybe paid more for the thing that they're really good at.
Yeah. Well, these guys who are coming into these DOR roles, for the most part, have only ever done one job to a substantial degree. Borthwick was a line-out coach. He did a little bit of other thing, a few other things with England, but primarily he was a line-out coach. And he's got a great reputation, and now he's a DOR. Gustard, the same. Sanderson, the same. He also missing Skivington, a line-out coach, effectively. Was he not?
Forwards coach at Irish.
Forwards coach. So if you look at those guys and what they've done, where they've gone, maybe it just shows that the game is specialising, and it's very hard to be a it'd be very hard for Sam Vesti to be a forwards coach and then a backs coach and then a line-out coach, say, and then go to DOR. But it's my feeling that maybe when you're looking for your DOR, you want a guy who's done more than one coaching role. So maybe that's generic defence and forwards, or generic attack and backs, something like that.
Yeah, so I'd agree with that point, and I'd add something else to it, a box that certainly Borthwick does tick, and that's being involved in multiple different setups, as in Borthwick had Saracens, then Japan, then England.
Yeah.
Something like the multiple apprenticeships that Ronan O'Gara has done, that seems like a really good approach to get well-rounded and get have visibility in multiple different ways of doing things, strategies, ways of managing players, interpersonal skills, the whole shooting match. Sanderson has, I mean, he's got very good pedigree in one very successful setup, but nothing beyond that. And I worry a little bit about it, because I'd almost like guys to take the long-term pragmatic approach like O'Gara and become more well-rounded rather than just jump straight to DOR.
Although is he not... Yeah, you're right. O'Gara's been... He was at Racing for a bit, then he went to New Zealand, then he came back to France, and he's now a DOR.
Yeah.
He's only been coaching and in coaching setups for as long as Sanderson, but as you say, Sanderson's just...
Yeah, so it's the range. And so there's some Welsh boys that have done that. Mark Jones did RGC as a head coach. I mean, that's also quite an interesting thing, isn't it? If you're in the Premiership for any length of time and you're not a DOR and a head coach, you're going to have to be a positions coach or a forwards coach or attack coach or so on and so forth, right? If you drop down, you can have the whole shooting match. So Mark Jones did RGC. He did something. He's at attack at Scarlets. He went over to do attack at Crusaders, and now he's returning with Cardiff Blues in some capacity. And maybe some of these coaches should drop down, but there's a risk there that you never come back up.
I think now actually
a real risk.
You don't want to. Basically, Premiership or
it is, isn't it?
I think for a lot of them. I think it's a great fit, and I'm sure Alex Sanderson will do well. And another bit of coaching news this week, Paul O'Connell with Ireland.
I saw this on Twitter. I didn't really look into it too much.
Paul O'Connell's just going to be part of Andy Farrell's brought him into the Ireland setup, which is, I mean, it was inevitable. I think the two that are inevitable, you've already mentioned Ronan O'Gara and Paul O'Connell, and we've had a chat before, who would be, when those two are taking the reins of either Munster and or Ireland, Who's the number one? Who's the number two in that little duo? But Paul O'Connell is there to whip those forwards into shape for Ireland.
So is he actually coaching, or is he? So like Richard Hill was, I don't know if he is, but he was involved in the England setup, wasn't he? As team manager.
Yeah, same with Will Carlin does a similar style role. He's like got an involvement with England, but he's not coaching. Richard Hill, team manager. But Paul O'Connell is going to go as forwards coach, which pushes Simon Easterby, who was previously forwards coach, to be a defence coach.
So that doesn't really make much sense to me. And it doesn't matter how great you were as a player. We saw it with Martin Johnson. It didn't really work out. He should really have done.
He has been coaching in France. Yeah, in France.
Oh, Paul O'Connell has?
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
He coached at Stade.
Oh, I'll take it back. Makes loads of sense. Yeah. I can't believe they didn't do it sooner.
So that
he's not got the breadth and depth of experience as someone like Ronan O'Gara, who does seem to be. I'm kind of using him as a great example. I'm using him as a great example just because he's done a multitude of different things over what is becoming a longer period of time. O'Connell did a bit at Stade for a year or so and then has done a bit with Ireland under-21s or under-20s,
yeah.
But it doesn't have the same depth that other coaches do.
No.
And it does feel like, I mean, so Easterby, obviously a very experienced player and now an experienced coach. O'Connell, incredibly experienced player, incredible leader. And Andy Farrell, incredible player, incredible leader, and now a very experienced coach. They do seem to have quite a lot of experience in similar parts of the game, similar types of individuals as well in that.
Isn't it funny
setup.
That no one's ever employed a Saracens attack coach? What does that tell you? I don't even know. Who is the Saracens attack coach?
They don't need one. Owen Farrell, probably.
Owen Farrell, yeah.
Mark McCall and Owen Farrell have got that covered. we'll wait and see. Let me segue us into the next bit of news. If, you know, assuming the Alex Anderson thing is all completely confirmed, and as it will be in the morning, mm-hmm. I would have been working, or I maybe still will be working, at Sale's first home game with Alex Anderson, which in a couple of weeks' time. However, these European fixtures, very much up in the air.
Yeah.
And again, the news may well be breaking and being confirmed about this. But this ties in with the Six Nations as well, and it all stems from France, and it's because, it started with some of the French teams being unhappy about the style or manner of testing and how it's imbalanced between the UK and Ireland and France, and then the French government have been involved, and they're a bit like, I'm not sure about this.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a rugby question. It's not really, is it? I think there's politics afoot here. That's why I don't really know what's going to happen. I don't think anyone does. I think this will be settled by civil servants somewhere, and there's undoubtedly either something, you know, COVID related or Brexit related or something, meaning that there's a bit of a fly in the ointment. But I feel it'll probably get sorted out, and if it doesn't, I don't think it's rugby's fault. I think it's probably something more in line with what both sets of politicians are looking to achieve.
One little conspiracy theory, which I don't want to pretend, I don't even want to believe.
No,
this.
Don't even mention it. But go on.
Let's mention it.
Some French clubs seem much more keen to abandon the competitions than other French clubs. And funnily, and some of the French clubs that seem keen to abandon it, like Toulon and Bayonne, are ones who have no chance of progressing.
And right straight on the phone to Macron, who obviously, you know, they have his number.
Yeah, obviously.
And it's like, yeah, okay, let's it stacks up perfectly.
I'm absolutely sure that's got nothing to do with it. And obviously this is a, you know, serious situation, and like you say, there's politics afoot, which I'm just glad rugby's on at all.
Yeah, and it's very easy to criticise rugby. It's one of my favourite sports, actually. It is one of my favourite sports, watching rugby, but also criticising the powers that be in rugby. But I give them credit for this. They've moved heaven and earth to make sure that there is some form of competition in Europe. They can't foresee this kind of stuff. They've done their testing as advised by the government, and you know, maybe this is a criticism of them, actually. You know, in my opinion, they follow the laws too closely, or the guidance too closely. There's never any challenging. There's never any lobbying on behalf of rugby's behalf. It's all kind of, this is what the guidance say. We must follow the guidance, rather than saying, well, this makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Which was weird, because do you remember when we first went into lockdown, one of his rare appearances, was it Darren Childs, came out and said rugby's going to be the first sport back playing again.
Did he say that?
Yeah, and rugby ended
Has
up being
he watched rugby?
The last.
Yeah, yeah. What did you expect? It's obviously going to be the last. Mm. Obviously. So anyway, where was that going? So yeah, despite all that, they've worked really hard to get a European competition. There's no point in saying, oh, it should be cancelled, or oh, it's nonsense. I think, you know, during the first lockdown, we had when it all kicked off, sport was cancelled because it looked kind of frivolous and trivial and it's not something we need, it's not essential. But actually, in the second lockdown, it feels like people have sort of come around to the thought that,
hold on, we're on at least number three now.
Yeah, yes,
exactly. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it is essential. You know, the prisoners need entertaining, and I can't see I can't see it getting cancelled. I think they've worked out it is societally important. It's one of those things that we just need. Yeah.
So I definitely agree with that point that for morale, when you are trapped at home, you need an outlet, and sport is great at being that outlet, even if it's just 80 minutes here or 90 minutes there. I am worried about the Champions Cup, though, and I think if something had to go, I'd be fairly relaxed about this season's Champions Cup going, just because it's such a kind of odd format. It's already been fundamentally disrupted, and teams awarded 28-0 wins, and we're only two rounds into it, and more of those are going to happen. The one that really concerns me, so I'm sanguine about the Champions Cup. The one that concerns me is the Six Nations, because the Six Nations is just such a good, it's such a good sporting tournament. And it's, even though it's not the same without fans there, because it is so important for fans, the storylines, the history, the teams, the competition, it is such a good spectacle that I really, really don't want to lose the Six Nations.
So that's why I think the European Games might be okay, because the French government will look forward to that and go, this is interesting. Everyone in France wants Six Nations. We all want the Six Nations. What happens next? And I think they'll find a way around it. That's my personal thought. And one of the reasons is they don't want to set the precedent for the Six Nations to cancel that.
Well, there is potential talk of Six Nations happening all in one country, and
this stupid bubble thing.
People in a bubble. Which it's hard for me to sort of, because we'll get onto the slight rule enforcements that are being brought in, COVID related in the Premiership in a minute. So I don't want to. I understand why that would be done, just to enable rugby to happen at all. Doesn't mean I have to like it.
Yeah.
Where there was an American sport over the summer when it restarted.
NBA.
Was it at Disney World?
Yeah, NBA did it.
Yeah.
Now, where would be, if you had to do it anywhere in the world, the Six Nations, to host it, where would you want to do it? Because Disney World is pretty cool.
Euro Disney?
Yeah, Paris, perfect.
Yeah. One's there.
The issue with this is the Six Nations isn't each of the teams playing against each other. That is, it's not the Six Nations if it's just England playing France.
And also,
it's only the Six Nations when it's England playing France in Twickenham one year and in Paris the next year. And I don't want to take it away because of what we've just said. But I almost think it's a little bit like this with the Lions when people are talking about doing it in the UK. You might get a short-term fix, as in, yeah, we can keep the competition going, but you're actually doing longer-term damage. You're harming what that is and what that means, what that represents, and therefore the value of it.
Yeah, there's definitely that. That said, the value of going to France without a crowd. No, you are right. I'll tell you why you're right. Because Wales play at Parky Scarlets, and it's just not the same. Even with the crowds not there, the venue itself has some sort of gravitas.
Six Nations should not happen there.
Yeah, it shouldn't. No, I mean, maybe an international, but it shouldn't be the home of the internationals. So, yeah, you are right.
But it would be, as in this year, because Principality Stadium is still a Nightingale, isn't it, as far as I'm aware.
That is a fair. All right, I might let that one slide.
Yeah.
In terms of, I'm not going to say, oi, you.
Yeah, you guys.
Off you go.
We've got an international to play.
Yeah. I mean, that might be a justifiable reason not to play at that ground, but at least on home soil. I mean, maybe I'm being too idealistic with it, but
I don't think so. I don't think that the NBA bubble experiment proved particularly successful.
What do you think, Phil, on the potential way of managing the Six Nations?
So I'm more comfortable with the Six Nations being held in one place as long as we get it. The bit that I think has to move back is the Lions. I don't think you can have the Lions without everything that goes with a Lions tour. And for me, that means it has to be in South Africa with fans. And if that means moving it to 2022, we've got to move it to 2022.
I don't think that's going to happen,
Lions
mate.
Lions is so sacred.
I totally agree. I don't think that's going to happen. And this is where I think the money is going to mean that actually they make wrong long-term decisions. And it feels like things are stacking up to be done in the UK this summer.
I'd be really, really disappointed with that.
I would.
So really disappointed.
I don't think it will happen in the UK.
I really hope you're right.
I think there's too many hurdles. Okay, so think about this, right? They want to play a Lions game in Twickenham, as you would do. So many layers to this. So first of all, let's stop from the beginning. I think the Lions will go ahead. The reason I think this is because the four unions used to administer the Lions. They no longer do. They now have a company separated, which sits alongside the four the Six Nations, and they administer the Lions, which means there is a whole unit of people somewhere who are responsible and also reliant on the Lions going ahead for their job. Right, so if there's no Lions, there's no jobs. So they are very motivated to make sure that the Lions play. Whereas the unions, if they were administrating it, they might go, yeah, well, let's just get rid of it for now, which would probably be but that's probably what I would do. I'd just can it for this year. So there's pros and cons to that. Obviously, there's, you know, the fact that there's a self-interested party, rightly so. That's not in any way a slight on them, but they are, and they want, you know, they need the Lions for their job. Under any normal circumstances, I think that's a good idea, but because of the pandemic and whatnot and the restrictions placed on the sport, maybe it's not, and maybe that's why they'll force through a substandard product. Now, if you do it in the UK, imagine how hard this is. Owen Farrell trots out in his England kit. He's got BT as a sponsor in what do you call it? Is it BT the sponsor in England?
O2,
thank you.
O2, yeah.
BT is obviously Murrayfield. Yeah. Well, the title sponsor of the Lions is Vodafone. So you've got to go to Twickenham, you've got to remove all of the sponsorship, you're getting no fans in, and then you've got to get a load of other sponsors, which are all over the kits of the Lions.
This is small stuff.
It is not, mate. This is huge stuff for those people that spend an awful lot of money
on
sponsorship.
Overall, compared to the sponsorship money and the TV money and all the rest of it, that's small fry.
But, no, it's a big deal. So these are the problems that they're facing. They've got all of these commercial partnerships. So a small one, right, would be the drinks partnership. So they've got like London Pride or something. Now, that's a very cheap sponsorship to sell if you're going to South Africa, because no one sells it. So you get a couple of hoardings, but no one can actually buy it.
Oh, sorry. Are you speaking as if there's going to be a crowd in? I think if it goes ahead in the UK and Ireland this summer, there won't be crowds.
Crowd or not. I mean, they've still got to unpick all of these partnerships.
You don't have to unpick all of the branding outside the stadium and in the.
You do. You actually do.
And the beers. Anyway, yeah. I think that's.
These are the problems. Honestly, Tim, these are the problems that they're going to have. And this is why it's very, very problematic. It's far easier for the Lions to go on tour than it is for the Lions to play at home because of the commercial arrangements. Okay. That is the stumbling block.
But then South Africa misses out on their golden egg. I have actually given this some thought in the week, and my preferred solution is that the autumn internationals still happen, but you might up the number of games that home nations play against tier two sides, and you just play the Lions in South Africa at the same time.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea, actually. Can I just revisit? I've had a thought about the bubble idea. You see the problem?
As in Euro Disney, the Euro Disney Six Nations.
Yeah, can I just say how miserable it would be to have to stay in Euro Disney with no staff there, everything's a bit drab, overgrown. It's going to be like a hellscape, isn't it? Like a post-apocalyptic hellscape.
And also, like, before social media, they would have been able to smuggle in, you know, some Parisian women that they meet at a cafe.
Now,
or
Tim,
something.
Tim.
But they or men, or whatever, or some...
or friends.
Whatever, but they just won't, you just wouldn't be able to get away with that. Well, there'd be people waiting for a scandal.
I know you're only saying that because the NBA had exactly the same problem.
Oh, no, I didn't know that at all. But
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to give you an out here, Tim.
Yes, that's why I mentioned that, because, of course, the NBA,
had the same problems,
issue.
Exactly the same problems. So, yes, I can absolutely see where you're coming from there. Yeah, the problem, of course, with this idea is it means the Lions tour is just going to be three games because you couldn't possibly justify flying. I mean, who are they going to play midweek? Like Gloucester? You're going to fly Gloucester in for 6 weeks?
It can't happen. If it happens, I'll be really disappointed. And as I've said, it might solve the short-term issue with TV money and sponsorship money, but it's a long-term net negative, big time.
Okay. Just a little an impromptu quiz for you two.
Come on, then.
Hit me with it.
So I'm looking. I've got British and Irish Lions Wikipedia up right now. Neither of you get it up on your phones because that would be cheating.
Yeah.
And you're going to take it in turns and tell me, list off international teams that the Lions have played against.
Okay.
And I'll give you a clue. There are, there's nine listed, but one of them is not an international team. So there's eight here that are listed.
Okay.
All right.
Who's going first?
I'll go first. New Zealand.
Correct.
Okay.
Tim.
France, as we learnt last week.
Correct.
Australia?
Correct.
South Africa?
Correct.
Right, we're on to four. So there's five left.
Okay. Now it's going to get tricky. So
the next one's easy, then it gets tricky.
Argentina.
Correct. They've played Argentina. Do you know how many times?
Four.
Tim, any advance on four?
No, I would have said four as well.
Seven times they've played Argentina.
Really?
Really?
Oh, there you go. Bloody hell.
So there are now...
So they are, there are four left, or five?
Well, there's three international teams, and one of them is a representative team. You will not get the representative team.
So they're due to play Japan. I'm going to assume that was the first time it's happened. So, and I don't think they've.
So of the three, two are.
Don't give us any clues. We don't need clues. Thank you.
Okay. I will go. Thinking maybe on a tour to Australia or New Zealand, they play. I'm going to say possibly. Would they play like a Papua New Guinea against Australia when they went to Australia or something like that? I'll say Fiji.
Ooh, nice.
Fiji is correct. Well done.
Damn it.
One game against Fiji. I've not got the year on this, but Fiji beat them. The Fiji are the only nation who have a 100% win rate record.
That's a great fact. Lions. That's a brilliant fact.
So we've got two to go. These are tough.
I'm going to say Scotland.
No.
Is there any home nations in there?
It's not a home nation.
Okay. I'm going to say the same line of thinking was maybe they played against one of the Pacific Island nations when they went down under to New Zealand or Australia one time. I'm going to have the same thought and say Zimbabwe.
Oh, that's my next one. Damn it.
So that is a great shout. And what I can tell you is the other nation, the representative nation, was the East Africa Rugby Union team, which drew players from Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. And potentially
JB was literally about to answer that.
I'm about to say that.
But no, they're not Zimbabwe, but that is a good shout.
Okay.
Now, the two, one you could get, the other, you would have to go through the whole, I don't know, 216 or however many countries there are in the world to get close to it.
All right. Rhodesia.
No.
Canada.
Great shot.
Canada is correct.
Damn it. I've dominated this.
Don't think so, because you gave me the big three, the easy ones. Well, you've gotten them wrong, have you?
Canada, they played in 1959 against Canada.
Love it. So they would have gone...
So USA would be the other one?
No, the other one is not USA. So the other one they played in 1950... which was a tour to New Zealand and Australia.
Cook Islands?
Nope.
Germany?
No. think somewhere in between Britain and Ireland and Australia and New Zealand.
Hong Kong? If you were sailing?
You're in the right part of the world, roughly geographically.
Taiwan.
Taiwan is a maverick choice.
India.
Getting closer with India.
Pakistan.
No.
Getting closer with India. When? I'm thinking of like ex-colonial countries. Got
yeah,
no
that's
idea.
That's what I'm trying to think of.
Singapore or something.
No.
Don't know.
Wow. So if you drew... Well, if you were travelling... Imagine if you were travelling from...
On a boat, I assume, right?
Hong Kong.
Vietnam.
God knows what route they took.
Sri Lanka.
Indonesia.
Thailand. Indonesia, the Philippines, Vietnam.
Someone said it, I think. Someone said Sri Lanka, didn't you?
Yes, I said Sri Lanka.
Yeah, wow. Sri Lanka.
The British and Irish Lions played in Colombo. Did they all?
They played against. I'm trying to find out where the game took place, but they played against them.
Love it.
Have we not mentioned
Sri
Lanka?
Yeah, a stop off. They stopped off in Sri Lanka, Ceylon, as it was called at the time.
Ceylon, yeah.
For an unofficial tour game.
Well, well, well. I'm sure we've mentioned Sri Lanka in the past as somewhere that good rugby has played.
So yeah, they must have gone.
They've got a sevens. Have they got? Did they have at one point a sevens team that were on the sevens circuit?
I have no idea. I can't remember. I'm sure it came up in the same way that Mauritius comes up frequently as a place that rugby is played and loved.
Oh, I bet it's loved. Like, I wouldn't mind. I'll play rugby in Mauritius.
Yeah.
No. Like, sign me up.
I think Mauritius played Zimbabwe recently. I think they're in the cup below. Whatever, you know, like they're tier two or tier three of African nations. Anyway, that's
what others so we got? We've ticked. Oh yeah, so very quickly, let's rattle through these. There was a lot of talk this week about the rules, the COVID related rules that have always existed but haven't been enforced and are now being enforced. Things like minimal time in dressing rooms and no face to face celebrations.
Let's just be very clear. They're stupid. They are stupid. I understand there are rules and rules must be followed because, I don't know, rules must be followed. The idea that it is somehow safer to disperse after you score your pushover try or your maul rather than celebrate with your mates is perverse. It is absolutely perverse. And to be honest, I get ice baths. I completely get... Oh, do I? I mean, do I really? I mean, you're as a group of guys, you know, you obviously have... A certain you have different rules to everyone else because of your status. Yeah, I can kind of get ice baths, fine. I could not for the life of me understand the celebrations. It's like
have you ever enjoyed an ice bath?
Never.
Exactly. So this is bonus. That's a great rule.
I wouldn't be surprised if one of the players wrote it down as a suggestion. and you just know this is performative. You know this is to send the message that, oh, look, we're allowed to get close after we've just been scrummaging. So it is absolutely ridiculous. There is another aspect to this, which is if you want the rules to be complied, particularly in rugby circles, treat it like a drinking game. Because when you see them score now, it is literally like a drinking game. The air high fives or the... Like, they've pre-planned so many different routines which don't involve coming close. Not dissimilar to a game of fives with the no smug rule because they score and then everyone literally runs away.
Yeah, and if you're not aware what that is, the game of five or spoof, it's sometimes known as. You can play it with coins or you can play it with your hands. And if you don't know the game, basically, if you are out and therefore have avoided the penalty or the drink that you're going to have to, the dirty pint you're going to have to drink at the end of it or whatever, you aren't allowed to go, yes, or celebrate.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're penalised. So I would love to see that rule if there was a no smug rule that referees had to enforce. Sorry, Adam Radwan, you just ran 100 metres for an amazing try, but no.
Not to be you, my friend.
No, penalised. Smug.
Radwan did the air high fives,
yeah,
which he would have had to do anyway because not a single one of his teammates was within 50 metres of him.
Yeah, that's just good practice when you're chasing Adam Radwan, isn't it? Organising that.
Yeah.
The celebration one is absolutely stupid.
I agree. You're absolutely right. The word you've used is 100% right. It's performative because, one little thing which is ridiculous, you can't face-to-face celebrate with your own teammates, but you can shake the hands of all your opponents at the end of a game. Which...
Yeah, they'll ban that soon. It just feels like...
So it is performative. It doesn't make sense. It is illogical. I'm willing to let it go if it just means we get rugby on the telly.
Yeah, it's kind of... Yeah. We must provide entertainment for these people, but not too much entertainment. Let's not enjoy it too much. There's serious things. So, but yeah. Everything else does make sense. Like, you know, grab-and-go food, yeah, okay, sort of, kind of, yeah, fine. You know, if that makes you happy, that makes you happy.
Phil, you pretty much in the same ballpark. Where are you at?
I am definitely in the same ballpark. And I say that from someone who, I think I've got quite a good appreciation of risk and understanding risk and understanding some of the failures that people often make to say things like, well, if we accept one risk, therefore another equivalent risk or another similar risk is also acceptable, which is, it's often like a fallacy. In this scenario, though, the additional risk of celebrating a try when you've just been scrummaging or just been rucking and mauling for 80 minutes, it is, JB's word is the best for it. It is performative. It will have, I cannot see it having any tangible effect at all. Not even a tiny little tangible effect. There will be zero tangible effect or increased risk from... Yeah. This or reduced risk in You're this right. scenario.
And from a performative point of view, I can't imagine a single person watching it and going, right, that's it. That's just inspired me to...
I will not see my dying grandmother now because the Premiership players did not high five.
But if it keeps the optics so that no one in some high place desperate to... You know, use the power that they've been bestowed upon them. If it means rugby's on the telly next week or the week after, then whatever.
100%. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll happily take it, Brad, in that we can continue to watch rugby.
Yeah. Now, someone who might not be able to continue to watch rugby, or any fans of the Women's Six Nations.
What's going on there?
Remarkably, and I do mean remarkably, Italy and Ireland have forgot to register their women's team as elite. So therefore, it might have to be a case of some sort of Four Nations competition unless they can rectify this mistake ASAP. Can you believe that?
Wow. I've not seen that. I've seen that there was an article on BBC earlier today that said it's being pushed back till April because normally the Women's Six Nations runs concurrent with the Men's Six Nations.
Yeah, that'll almost certainly be something to do with it. Yeah, the women's game is served so poorly by the men's game that if I was them, I would devolve my union and go and set up my own union with more appropriate laws, more appropriate rules, and actually be the centrepiece, the jewel in the crown of another organisation, rather than being continually ignored, or basically just treated as something which they use to show how virtuous that the main union is. It's not good enough. So I don't know. There will obviously be no action taken against the two unions that forgot to register their elite women's team. But there we are. That's how we live now.
Well, let's hope we get back to the women's game soon, because there's normally some pretty good spectacles in the Women's Six Nation.
Yeah, yeah. It's just it's beyond a parody. That it's beyond a parody. I mean, yeah, I forget certain things. I wouldn't forget that my highest level of rugby is not elite, and therefore forget to register it.
Didn't you forget that you were playing in a fantasy rugby draft final, that it was two-legged?
Semi-final,
mate, and I made the
finals. Was it semi-final?
Yeah, there is that.
That was a big oversight, yeah.
It was a massive oversight. I could have won that. Don't think I'll be playing in the semi-final this year, though.
No. It looks like I've limped past you.
Have you really?
Yeah.
I thought you'd have spanked me.
No, limped is only thanks to Curtis Rona's try. I think that sealed it for me, which I probably celebrated more than he did. I was on the bike in my gym, and when he scored, my cadence and power output went up significantly for about 20 seconds.
Wowza! Good game, though. Brilliant game.
It was. It was an entertaining game.
Yes, entertaining is the right word.
Yeah, we might get onto that a little bit later.
Yeah, let's talk some rugby because there was so much great rugby. And let's start with that game that was on Friday night, Bath Wasps. What a game.
That is all right.
It was loose.
It's reasonable.
It was loose.
This was ridiculous. From the off, pretty much. I mean, from 2 minutes in, when Priestland canters 50 metres, chased only by, it was West and Cruz.
Yeah, Tom West.
Yeah, two front row forwards were the only people near him as he, from a box kick, I've watched that about four times and I still can't work out what went wrong with Wasps' whole defensive line. From a planned exit box kick, that there is like three pairs of hands, and then all of a sudden, Priestland has no one other than a loose head prop and a hooker.
Yeah, no coach is going. What's his name? Ian Costello is not going, okay, boys, right, listen, so box kick, prop, hooker on the wing.
Exactly.
No. Yeah. With no one else nearby.
I still can't work out, but that really set the tone for the game. And it was brilliant to watch because, I mean, yeah, sure, some guys made some first up tackles in the defensive line every now and again.
Occasionally.
But no one was tackling in the backfield. No one bothered. No. It was brilliant.
Your man.
Whose man? My man?
Your man. No, your his man. Their
man.
Oh,
right. Sorry. I thought you invited me there to talk about Paolo Adogwu.
No, I was saying your man.
Doggers.
Doggers. He looks every bit the NFL running back.
He's awesome.
I think the Buffalo Bills missed their man. Christian Wade, there was an interview with him. He's bulked up and he's still fighting for that dream. He's not made a 53-man roster yet, but he's still going. But Doggers has got running back potential.
He's so powerful, isn't he?
So powerful.
I love his story because wasn't particularly wanted in the Leicester Academy. Yep. Went to Sale. 19 years old, he was pretty good. He was scoring quite a lot. Was nowhere near the size he is now. I mean, he was always
he was a big boy then.
Yeah, but not like he is now. He is much, much bigger now. As soon as Sale got some money, they were kind of like, not sure we need you quite so much. Lost out to lads like Solomona, which is, you know, no shame. Solomona's bloody brilliant. Found himself at Sale FC, surplus to requirement at Sale. Wasps pick him up. And Wasps have worked out a way to use him and get the most out of him. And, you know, it's a cool story because he is an unusual player. And it takes quite an inventive coaching group, much like Sale were when they had no money, in order to get the most out of these types of players. And that's exactly what Wasps have done. And it's brilliant to see.
So I was going to ask, and I think you've probably answered my question there, Jay, but it's... For both Doggers and Tom Cruise, who lit up this game as well.
Yeah.
Doggers has been at Leicester and Sale, as you mentioned. Tom Cruise has been at Sale and then a few other places. It seems like there's two failings on, let's say Doggers, but Leicester and Sale's half. It's a failure to identify talent combined with a failure to, if they do identify talent, the specific talents that these boys have, it's make use of them.
Yes.
And what has exactly gone wrong? Because these boys, well, they were the difference in this game.
Yeah.
They won this game for Wasps, not single-handedly, but they scored the tries that won this game for Wasps.
It's just one of those funny things, isn't it, that sometimes a lot of clubs pick the players on what they, you know, on a preconceived idea of what that player should be in that position. And Adogwu is fairly unique. I mean, who does he remind you of? Inga Twigamala. You know, he's short, squat, massive thighs, super powerful. He's not like a Josh Bassett, is he? Or someone like that. A completely different type of player.
Yeah, no, but I think you touched upon what the issue was. Sale got him in when they were spending well under the cap. When they had the cap money to spend, they got rid of him.
Yeah.
And they got in some expensive... They signed, you know, Marlon Yard, and they got in players that would have cost them a lot more and were on paper much better. Oh, one of your cats has just come to say hello.
Hello.
Big fan of Doggers. And and I think that's it. And it's the same with Leicester. We've talked about Harry Thacker many times. They let him go and they kept much more expensive... on paper more experienced and better, but really not. And I think it's the same story with Tom Cruise as well.
You're completely right.
Thacker is a great example of this problem with Leicester as well.
They did it with Alex Lewington as well, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, look, coaches do this all the time, and it's not necessarily a coach's fault, because what they are there to provide their experience in order to select players. So a great example of this in the NFL would be Russell Wilson.
Yeah,
because if you're a scout, you want to find the next Tom Brady, who's 6'5" or something. You don't want maybe six foot, and therefore you don't look at him as someone that you can draft or someone that you can play, because he doesn't fit what the players who've come he doesn't fit the mold of the players that have come before him. Same in rugby, exactly the same thing. You're playing these scouts and these managers because they know what they're looking for.
So I've got an analogy here, which I'm sure a lot of people can apply to whatever business you're in, but in radio advertising, no one ever got fired for doing what's already been done before. Whereas sometimes I've said to clients, we sort of come up with an amazing idea for clients, and the sales guy in the business has just not ever gone and pitched that idea. They're scared to, because if you do something different than what's already been done and it doesn't go well, your head's on the block. So Harry Thacker, smaller, more diminutive hooker, relatively. Doggers being a slightly different type of character. Tom Cruise was, a smaller, more agile hooker.
That's exactly right. So your head's not going to be on the block if you've got no money and you've got to play the guy.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, right. Oh, he's pretty good. So, yeah, I'm absolutely delighted.
And so Worcester in a situation, exactly as you touched on, where Sale were, where money's tight and they've got to squeeze value where they can, so they pay more attention to trying to squeeze value out of people that might be undervalued.
Yeah, and ironically, Wasps have also got a lot of players from when they did have money and Sale didn't have money, and those guys didn't win the game. Although they are playing well. Tommy Taylor, Gaskell. Not seen Rob Miller for a little while, but he's still knocking about.
Yeah.
Cipriani, of course, who moved.
Good question. It's a good question, though, Phil. It's an interesting point. And it's interesting that Lee Blackett really seems to think Doggers is a 13.
Well, I don't know what he thinks. I kind of think that they must pick their team by, bingo balls or something. And it just works. It seems like they're far more fluid.
Tim, you look concerned.
Yeah, it's because I can't see the waveform. I can see Phil's head, which is fine.
Thank God.
It's a much better sight seeing Phil's head than the waveform, but I suddenly thought, geez, have we just been talking silence?
Oh, can you imagine? I can imagine, because we've done it before. I don't think it necessarily matters, because they're doing so much good stuff with the ball in hand and their attack. What gets me about Wasps is they continue to press their attack forward no matter who is in position. So there is a ruck, and then next thing you know, a winger will pick it up, or a prop will come in at scrum half, or it's just relentless. It's relentless, and they also allow the players to do what they're good at. If Doggers didn't get man of the match, I think there's every chance that Bassett would have, because every restart, he is all over people.
The point you've made there about allowing the players to do what they're best at is absolutely spot on, and I think we've got more to talk about in this game, but just one point I wanted to make on the Quinns London Irish game that I watched this afternoon. It's certainly with Quinns. I think London Irish, they did get some of the best out of some of their players, like Rona and Tom Parton, Tom Parton in particular. But Harlequins, they're getting the best out of Marcus Smith, 100%. He looks electric every time he gets the ball. But is he getting the best out of the players that are around him? And specifically, someone like Joe Marchant, who was deadly quiet, like did not do a single thing. And they couldn't bring him into the game. They didn't bring Murley into the game. They didn't bring Liner into the game. They didn't bring Aaron Morris, Mike Brown. None of them came into the game. And there's like a failure to, other than Marcus Smith and Dom Brandt, who they are building the team around those two. But other than those two, none of their star players, and they've got star players, are shining.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Frustrating contradiction for Quinns fans to watch that when they watch Wasps do it so brilliantly with far less star power on display.
Yeah, and actually, you know, if they had all the money in the world, would Wasps be employing Lee Blackett?
Well, great question. That, probably not.
Oh, my goodness. What a great point, which echoes exactly what we just said.
Yeah.
And you talk about squeezing value and that you don't... And finding systems and finding trying to get the best out of the people that you have. Look at Newcastle.
Yes, that's enough. Yes. I mean, that's basically what I was going to say. Every team this week has looked really competent, really, really competent. Even the ones that are losing. Like, I was watching Worcester. And I was like, I really like the way that they're moving the ball. I like their patterns. I like their shape. They're organised. And it's taken a little while for these teams to look like that. But both Newcastle and Worcester, and I'm not just saying that because they're traditionally the two lowest clubs. It's not, you know, damning with faint praise. They are both superbly well organised. So if you're going to win against the so-called lesser teams, you're going to have to be aware that they're no longer lesser teams. They are a real proposition.
Well, Newcastle were bookies' favourites to get relegated. We mentioned them in that conversation before the season started.
I thought they wouldn't get within 20 points of most people.
Well, they've got 24 points. Yeah. It's unbelievable. They got 20 points off 24.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
killing it. They're absolutely
they're in second place.
Yeah, and it's the Championship trio, Bristol, Newcastle and Exeter, top three.
Yeah, it's quite some stuff. Before we move on to that, can we just spend 5 minutes slating Bath?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Let's try and be proactive. How do you solve a problem like Bath?
So a really funny thing. I was talking to someone in the know who was definitely in the know. Definitely in the know. And we both agreed Bath's problem was their attack. They scored 44 points, so maybe it's not the attack. I don't know what it is. Maybe they just need to invest in their squad a bit more. maybe one more good player.
But, yeah, one more international.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I mean, how many? They've got 12 internationals in their starting.
They've
15.
Got more England EPS members than any other club.
I mean,
maybe Saracens would be different if they had all theirs together, but...
How?
Yeah.
How do you have that many England players, internationals in general, that much talent, that much money, in this case, so many points, and still lose a game? I mean, that is remarkable. That is simply remarkable.
They were twice 13 points ahead. They were winning at halftime. They were 13-0. Like, they're at home.
It happened last week as well. They were 14-0 up against Leicester.
Yeah, it happened exactly the same, like blow for blow last week as well.
And sorry, Phil, go on.
No, just I'd be so frustrated if I was a Bath fan because you can see the talent is there. They do great. They do some brilliant things. They scored some good tries. They've got serious talent. Faletau seemed to be back to his best, or certainly that's the best game I've seen of him in a Bath shirt for a while. And they still just can't put it together to get...
I think there's a couple of things here. Firstly, I think there might be something with their conditioning because they're not an 80-minute team. And I really think that might be an issue there. Mm. If you want to think of something that they could do that might make an improvement. These are professional guys. This shouldn't be an issue, but there you go. Conditioning might be one thing. But I also want to... Stuart Hooper's going to come under more and more pressure, and I want to stick up for him and go, well, you've seen the last couple of weeks. He sets his team up. They go out and blow other teams off the field, and then...
They don't.
And then they don't. And I don't know how, when you see those two sides of the coin, you can just automatically say, coach...
I don't know what the answer... I don't think it is the coach. I honestly don't think it's the coach. I don't think it's Stuart Hooper. I certainly don't think it is Neil Hatley. I think Neil Hatley's a wonderful coach. I just think there's a more pressing underlying culture within that club. And, you know, Neil Hatley could go to any club and probably make a good fist of it.
I would suggest just one thing. Oh, maybe Leicester would be the... No, because Leicester have got Leicester City. I would say probably of Gloucester and Bath would be the two. Gloucester and Bath and Exeter.
And Bristol.
To be fair. No, Gloucester, Bath and Exeter. Although Exeter's... Well, I don't know. Yeah, no, Gloucester and Bath, definitely. Those players are like big fish in a relatively small pond.
Yes,
they are like sort of the focal point for those towns.
It's like my Barcelona argument. Why would you try any harder being good at football once you're at Barcelona? You're at Barcelona. Where else are you going to go? I'll take my 3-year contract, my millions of pounds, and sit on the beach.
And those are the two clubs down the years, Gloucester and Bath, that you sort of should have, you know, in the professional era, should have achieved more.
Yeah. I mean, the point I would make on their squad in general is, who have they improved? Look at their back line. Bought in Benson, he's ace. Ben Spencer's ace, but they bought him in. Reece Priestland, he's Reece Priestland. He'll do what he does. But they bought him in. Rory McConachy showed up to Bath out of the box, already a good winger. They didn't really improve him. Cam Redpath,
I think that's unfair. He came from Sevens and Moseley before that. I think that's unfair.
Yeah. But he just was put on a 15s pitch and he was ace. I don't think that Bath have developed him. He just seems to be a great winger out the box. I mean, I think he's been effective since day one. Unless you did.
I'd say maybe that's one that is a little bit harsh. Just because I'd only had Sevens views of him before that. And yeah. no one else had even given him a crack at 15s.
The Bath Academy,
others, I think, make your point really well.
Yeah, definitely.
Like Joseph, like Watson, for example.
They seem to be going backwards, those two.
Thokkanasinghe.
Thokkanasinghe, Rokkaduguni. Over the last couple of years, certainly.
I mean, Tom de Glanville has obviously come on. He is a Bath kid through and through. Everything else is just bought in.
The Bath Academy used to be prolific. Absolutely prolific. You'd find Bath players ending up at clubs all over the place.
Yeah.
It hasn't been as productive. Whilst they've got good young players, it hasn't been anywhere near as productive. And some of their front rows they've brought in.
Yeah, I would win a premiership with Bath. I mean, I don't mean like, you know, I don't mean that, like hypothetically. I would actually go in and win a premiership if I had the keys to Bath.
I'm just going to say one thing that taps into the conversation we had last week so we don't go over old ground. They're not horrible enough.
No.
If you put Danny Grucock back in that pack, I think he would just... Even at this age. I love Danny Grucock.
I mean, yeah, but even the pack, I mean, they like to hurt people. Josh McNally, Charlie Yule's hard workers, physical lads. So I don't know. I don't know what to do with Bath. It's just...
When it clicks, possible. It'll be dynamite.
But... Yeah, and you know, you can see when they lose the plot, can't you? Because when they start and they've got this lovely structure, Reece Priestland scored early doors. The week before that, they looked really good first up. In the Europe, they looked really good for 15 minutes. And you kind of... There's a point when they lose it, and you can see because they start doing wraparounds and everything's much looser, and they score a few points, but you just know the players have lost confidence at that point, and they've lost confidence in the systems and processes. And they're just playing through individual flair.
That's the Bristol mantra at the minute. And I think Semi Randrandra tweeted just simply after the game, trust in the process, which is what Bristol players say all the time.
Trust in the process.
Trust in the process.
It's a good way to think. It gives you sort of detachment from what you're trying to do. It's good. Doesn't make you think too much.
And in those times when it gets tough, and if you have that mentality where...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
We've planned for all the time, and the man next to me, to my right and to my left, is going to do the same.
Yes. Yeah. So if you think about lineouts, I think about lineouts occasionally. But if you think
just
about
occasionally,
once, twice. If you think about lineouts and you're being beaten in, you know, or you're not getting the best of it, just go through your checklist. Have you done absolutely everything? You know, are the team arriving at the right time? Are you getting in into your position in the lineup at the right time? Is your spacing correct? Are you pointing at the right player? Are you doing these tiny little things through and through? It's like rucking. You know, you can't quite do it now because it's one dynamic movement. But did I move my feet before contact? Did I go down? Did I roll? Did I present long? Did I do all of these things? And if the answer is yes to all of them and you're still getting done, well, maybe there's nothing that you can do today. But often there are so many small little things that you can do that you can fix it yourself. Trust in the process.
There's also the great thing about trust the process, which is the extension of exactly what you've said, JB. And sometimes you'll get all of those things exactly right and 2-3 lineouts will go against you. But you're doing everything right and you've got to trust the process, because if you are a 90%+ line-out team, you might get 3 bad ones go against you in a row, but you will trend towards the 90%+ for any you trust the process.
That's a great way of putting it.
It's not, you don't rip it up just because a few things have gone wrong.
Yep.
Great way of putting it. So, yeah, it's a trust issue perhaps, Bath, a trust and a confidence thing, like in deep in their core. That there's not that belief, which is why they fade in games and they get looser unnecessarily. Whereas, let's jump to Bristol. What a great performance down at Sandy Park. I'm just going to solve the Exeter issue, because seeing as we just, how do you solve a problem like Bath? I'm going to say to Exeter fans, don't you worry. It looked to me like a team that are just knackered.
Yeah.
And it's no wonder when they had less break between seasons than any team. We're a couple of months into this new season now. They only had 3 weeks off after winning everything. So it's going to be all right.
I couldn't believe
Trust
the process.
I couldn't believe the Baxter out tweets. There's so many people calling for Baxter out. They'll be fine. Look, Saracens lost, what, 3 or 4 games once on the bounce?
I'd say what? The year Exeter won the Premiership in 2017, was it, when they beat Wasps?
Yeah, 16 or 17.
I was working at Ulster when there was the drop kick. Paddy Jackson got a last-minute drop kick.
Yes. Two of them, didn't he?
Yeah, I think it was 2 drop kicks. Phil will remember. It was
2 Paddy Jackson. One to Gareth Steenson,
yeah. And it was a last-minute win for Ulster and Exeter. And that was their ninth loss in 10 or 11 games at the start of a season, which was like... And Rob Baxter was... Even then, I remember him in that interview just going like, yeah, it's not good enough, but do you know what? We know what we're going to do. We know how to do it. And so with Exeter, they've been here. It's trust the process. I think that's it. Yeah. Trust the process.
You know, it's amazing, isn't it? You think how long Rob Baxter's been there. And... The thing with Exeter is, how can you put it? It's like a competitive advantage is an advantage because it's not easy to replicate. And one of the problems that a lot of teams have is they really struggle to stick with management for a long time, even though we've just said at Bath, you know, fire everyone. I mean, maybe the best thing for Bath to do is literally just stick with everyone for a couple of years. But there again, you wake up in 6 years' time and you've still rubbish. Who knows? but yeah, it's really, really difficult. And it's really long term, and you don't understand until you start picking around Premiership clubs like how short term everything is. Everyone's on 2-year deals. Everyone wants to win tomorrow. Cash flow is king, rather than you know, long term planning. So there's only a handful of clubs that can afford the luxury, like Exeter have, of a proper long term vision. So it doesn't really matter if they lose 2 or 3, they'll be fine.
They will definitely be fine. But let's celebrate what was an incredible win and a very good performance for Bristol.
Yeah, and another team that can afford to look very, very long term, and probably are.
Yes, they've got enough money to be able to look pretty long term. And there's a nice mix of short term and long term.
There's a good mix of value and worthless. Extremely valuable.
It's a nice balanced squad in some respects, because you've got some young talent who've come through the ranks, and like guys like Harry Randall and Callum Sheedy, who controlled the game brilliantly, sped it up at the right time. Randall can speed up the game as well as any young halfback.
Outside shout for the England squad.
Nah,
Six Nations.
I mean, I would say yes, obviously, because I
like Willie Hines is injured.
Well, why not? I mean, the guy's playing well. Do you think he is a top class? Well, hang on. Let's just calm down a little bit now. What do we know about Eddie Jones? He likes loud scrum halves. So just because Dan Robson is probably the best scrum half in the league at the moment, doesn't mean he's going to get a shot. Him and Ben Spencer, it's for me, the two best.
But they're the best performing English scrum halves consistently for the last 2 years. Yeah. I'd say that.
But we kind of have a feeling, don't we, that they're not going to get in. And the reason is, unless I'm told otherwise, they're not loud enough.
Okay.
So does Harry Randall need to be the absolute best, or does he need to be the loudest?
He is yappy. Harry Randall has got Faf de Klerk energy.
Has he?
He's got Faf de Klerk vibes, 100%. He's nippy. He's quick.
Unpredictable at
unpredictable,
times.
Unpredictable, exactly as Phil was saying.
In a good way or in a faff way?
He's less faff than faff, yeah. But he's unpredictable in a good way. I really like him.
I think he's great. I just wonder, like, because he is so small, isn't he?
He is. He's absolutely tiny. I mean, being stood next to Nathan Hughes and Stephen Luatua for most of the game does not help anyone.
No, it doesn't. But you look at some of the other scrum halves, they're squat and powerful. But Randall's just a little bit breakable.
Stop. This is very English mentality.
This is why Paolo Adogu is scoring tries for Wasps and not somebody else.
Exactly.
It's exactly this.
Celebrate people for what they are and what they're great at, and it enables him to be amazing at other things. And another young, diminutive Bristol player who is just outrageous is Yoan Lloyd. This kid is out of this world good.
Do you know what I really hate now? It's really burning me up inside. I really hate it so much. So much. This kid is going to have to make a decision soon because he is thriving in Bristol. Bristol, to me, look every bit a potential championship-winning team. And we mentioned before, they're built for the long term. It's going to be, if you're a Bristol player, it's going to be awesome. Cal Sinclair made the right decision. Yoan Lloyd's going to have to come to a crossroads. He's going to say, is my prodigious talent? And you've nailed it. It is.
He's going to be Wales's 10.
But then he's going to have to play in Wales.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous.
And it's just not on.
No.
It's just, it's a very short career. You're not, what's he going to do? Win at the Dragons? Go to Ospreys and so on. It's just not fair. It's not fair.
Ospreys unbeaten in 2021.
Couldn't care less.
Hopefully they've signed him on a 12-year multi-layered contract with inbuilt pay increases depending on certain
things. And they'll say something like, is it, I don't know, part of the Mega 38 or whatever the squad size is that Wales wants to pick now. You didn't develop this guy. You're not going to contribute to his rugby. He's already in a team which is capable of winning championships and already won something in Europe. So he's actually already got a medal at this age. And you're going to drag him away and do what with him? Take him to the regions? It's an absolute farce. And yet this is the decision he's going to have to make, probably for a pay cut. Because if he stays at Bristol, he's going to do opposite. The other one, of course, is Sheedy. So actually Bristol, who have developed both these lads, are going to be left without a 10, which they have developed. I really detest this sort of nationalistic way. By the way, same for England. I hate the fact that the lads are not allowed to go and earn as much money as they can get in France.
Especially after the last year.
Yeah, especially after last year.
Well, after the last year in terms of everyone got a 25% pay cut, the outlook for rugby players is not as fruitful as it was. And the last few months with the talk of the concussions.
Just winds me. Like, someone in Wales thinks that you owe them your labour. No, you don't. Stay at Bristol, lads. In fact, that's what they should do because they've got two of the Welsh.
What are Wales going to do? Not pick Yoan Lloyd?
That's a good
point. In years to come.
Yeah, call their bluff. Stay at Bristol. Give them a whacking great big contract and call their bluff. And if Wales want to carry on losing, they can carry on losing. Makes me so angry.
He's such a natural talent. I really, really, really love watching him play.
Yeah, I wonder how long Sheedy's got in his contract. 2 years, maybe?
I think, again, chatting to a mutual Bristol fan friend of ours, JB, he's convinced he'll be Yoan Lloyd will be the 10 at Bristol longer term.
Not if he goes to Wales, he won't. But I'm sure Steve Lansdowne has got a plan for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I would have thought so.
So Bristol looking very, very good. Just one quick message I want to say. One of our listeners Christopher Argent has got in touch, and I just thought this was it's a sad story, but it's a really nice story, and it just demonstrates how great rugby is, and it's quite poignant at the moment, albeit it's not COVID related, but Christopher's a long-time listener. Now, his mum died this week. Not that that's the reason for the message. He actually just wanted to mention how amazing rugby is off the back of a situation like that. And his mum was a lifelong member at Harrow Rugby Club, where his dad, Dennis, is president. And Chris's brother, Nick, and him were both club captains and club men. So he just said that the number of messages he's got from the match day cook, from people that used to work on the bar, from his Colts coach, it just demonstrates how amazing rugby clubs are in communities and for people, and all the more reason why I just thought it's a lovely sentiment, especially when a lot of people will be missing that community from their weekly life, and they can't come back soon enough. So sorry to hear about that, Chris. Thank you for listening, and thanks for letting us know about the brilliant people at Harrow Rugby Club. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Definitely.
Well, yeah. Can I just say, I've got a sending from a listener. It's an apology, and it's also a thank you. So the apology is...
It's a great tease, that. If you'd have said that at the start, we got a message from a listener as an apology and a thank you. We could have hooked people across a period of time there.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, it's my apology and it's my thank you. So...
I'm confused. You're apologising.
I'm apologising. I'm thanking, right? So a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago, someone slid into my DMs.
Mm.
Someone has obviously been listening to this podcast for a very, very long time and said, would you like a much-worn Miles Benjamin shirt?
Mm.
So nothing happened. I just thought...
Did you tell your wife that you were having this DM chat?
No, I did not. Thank God you did not pick up my phone. Some hot Miles Benjamin chat occurred on Twitter. I kind of forgot it. I thought, you know, people say things when in an emotional state. Maybe there isn't a much worn Miles Benjamin shirt on its way. And then this week it showed up. And do you want to just pick it up there?
Oh, wow.
It's nice, isn't it?
It feels lovely. So it feels ever so slightly different from the ones you would buy as a replica jersey.
Because,
as it should be.
Well, because it is, of course.
Oh, it's got the GPS thing in the back.
And you'll notice it's very worn on the shoulders from all the rucks that were hit in that case.
So it is the it's the black and grey hooped Leicester change jersey.
The sort of jersey that I would give a lot of stick to if I saw it on TV, but in the flesh, it's beautiful.
And it says on the back, Benjamin 11.
Yep. So obviously I took a picture. Whoever this is has been listening to this podcast for a long, long time. And I say whoever it is because through all my DM chatter, I can't retrace the message. So I'm so sorry for not being able to find the message of...
We'll get back to you on that. That's just JB's poor admin. Phil would never have missed that.
But yes,
well, I can tell you who it is.
Oh, of course you can.
It's Lawrence Walters.
Yes, Lawrence,
you absolute legend.
Yes, Lawrence.
Lawrence, incredible. Thank you very, very much.
Right, and so when we do our very first,
can I just say, Benjamin is stacked. Oh, so
yeah, I was going to say, Phil, what size jersey do you think Miles... Damn it, you've sort of half given it away, but what size jersey would you have guessed Miles Benjamin would have?
So I've got the little video that JB sent to the group, and lengthwise it looks good. JB's not quite filling it out perfectly on the arms and shoulders.
I've lost it away easily, just saying.
Yeah, you're looking very trim, by the way, JB.
Awful. I look simultaneously fat and skinny.
Mate, honestly, this is one of those times where people always say it, like when they get older. You get older people who talk to you and go, enjoy your body now. Enjoy your body while you're younger, because you'll never look as good as you do now. That's some warped sense of self talking there, JB. I'm going to stage an intervention. You're looking in great, Nick. Enjoy it.
You do.
No, JB, nothing motivates people to go out lifting and running more than body dysmorphia. I don't care what you say.
Anyway, I'm going to say XL. Maybe he's a big old boy, is Miles.
It is XL. Miles Benjamin wore an XL jersey.
Should have played for England. He should have played for England.
He could ruck for England.
don't forget, he was the Premiership's top try scorer for Worcester.
For Worcester, yeah. So when the Patreon is completely... Well, it is set up, but it's just flipping... Anyway, the conversations need to be had. Anyway, when we do our first shirt giveaway...
It's not going to be that one.
It's not going to be this one, but whatever one we choose will be replaced by this, which will be a mainstay and never come down.
Well, it's up there with my Brady shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you Lawrence.
Indeed.
Yes.
And we are contacteggchasers@gmail.com.
Oh yeah, on that, if you want to email us, please do. If you have emailed us and we've not got back to you, it's because we're going to do your email on the show. We have got absolutely loads. So either at the end of this month,
well, potentially next week if there's no rugby,
or next week, yeah.
Oh, but soon.
Good point.
Very soon, we'll do a.
We could do this. We could probably do it weekly.
Well,
actually.
Let's do what. Let's commit. Let's make it a monthly thing. A little
first week of the month
chat back pod.
Yeah, something like that.
Come on, Carl, chat back. Hang on.
Yeah, everybody knows these.
Right. Everyone remembers that advert.
Right. Now, everyone knows this, right? Because the prank you would play on someone back in the day in the change room is you would phone these chat lines. So you'd need to know a number.
On their phone?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, on their phone. If they go to the shower, leave their phone out unlocked, and you just call chat back.
Of course you would. Yeah, or what was the other one? Friends. What was the Friends one? Phone friends! And it was like... yeah. Right, so this is how I know people have not played rugby before, right? Because if you don't know these numbers... maybe you have played rugby, but like 20 years ago when these things were in vogue, you would get people's mobile phones, they've gone to showers, and you would call chat back at £5 per minute, and you just leave it on the side. It's madness that you don't know that.
Yeah, well, just the general... Well, I know what you're referring to now. It was someone, you mentioned this on Twitter, someone tried to shame you for it.
I have no shame.
No. You picked the wrong person because JB has no shame. But the main thing is, actually, if you broaden it out to a bigger, more macro point, it's that person has never played rugby.
Of course they haven't.
Because they don't understand the concept of just playing pranks on your teammates. Whether that's a phone call or not, or whatever, that the concept is... my God, rugby changing rooms, I knew where my phone was at any given moment.
So, funny story, right? My birthday is on the 8th of July. Do you know why?
Your birthday is because
it's out of season.
It's out of season. My Facebook birthday is on the 8th of July because I was so scared of birthday pranks. It's actually on the 8th of April, which is bang in the season. My friend turned 40 the other day. I had no idea it was his birthday because it was one of the most closely guarded secrets of his life. I didn't even know he was close to 40. I just got a message from his sister saying, "Can you do a video for him, please?" He's 40. I was like, well, when's his birthday? I thought he was in the season. So if we didn't know your birthday, we just make one up for you in the season. Yeah, and so back to that. I was looking at a tweet I sent saying everyone knows these chatback numbers, but then I thought, actually, they probably didn't, because a lot of people didn't play rugby or do pranks or have banter, that naughty word.
Well, these things were quite, like, late 90s, early 2000s. It's a fair way of time ago now.
Yeah.
Okay, this is pre. I can't even remember the name of the apps now. The ones where you swipe.
I have no doubt that the individual that the most dangerous thing that happened to their phone would be a soy milk accident. But outside of that,
what's the dating app where you swipe and
Tinder?
Tinder. Oh yeah, pre Tinder and Grindr. So, you know,
well before that,
you don't need to call friends these days.
Anyway, trip down memory lane.
Yeah, where are we at? What rugby have we got, Phil? You got your finger. You know what's going on.
Other than Radwan's try, we've not really touched on Newcastle Gloucester.
We need to talk about this. Yeah.
So
this was I think JB, your point around positives to take out for the winners and losers is true in this. However, Gloucester will be so frustrated. So Gloucester are currently occupying bottom spot in the Gallagher Premiership. Yeah. And with 30 seconds to go, they were getting a bonus point out of this game. And that try right at the death for Newcastle, which didn't give Newcastle the winning bonus point, but did take away Gloucester's losing bonus point. I didn't give them the four try bonus point. Took away Gloucester's losing bonus point.
Oh, I mean,
it was so frustrating for them.
So
they should have got more out of this game.
Yeah, it's so frustrating because they even had the event. Do you have like a pivotal? Thank you. Like pitched battle almost, where you know the whole war changes. Well, for Gloucester, they had that and they won it. It was about 6 minutes before second half. Newcastle had already two tries. Well, not two tries, but they'd already got two tries. And they are putting ferocious pressure on Gloucester. And you think for the life of you, if they score again here, this game is over. It's done. For 6 minutes, Gloucester showed some real steel. And you think after that, they're going to win this. Because there's only something like 5 points in it. Gloucester go into the changing rooms absolutely bouncing because they know Newcastle can't hurt them. If they defend like that and they can give Newcastle the ball for 6 minutes and Newcastle can't get over the line, it's reasonable to say that their first two tries, they could be flukes, and now, specifically the Radwan one, that's just genius. And now it's all on Gloucester to go back out there and win. And they could have done it. They could have done it. And once a team starts losing, it's very, very hard to get out of that habit. They had two particular attempts to win. Sorry, not to lose, I should say. And both were breakdown infringements, and they were both mindless. And you think, this is a losing team? Not because that performance was losing, because stupid decisions on the breakdown. They give away two penalties, and it cost them the entire game. One of which, I don't know if you saw it, they were contesting at the breakdown, Gloucester. And the second clear out to the rucker comes in, and he blasts the first rucker over the ruck, so he's on the wrong side. And then he continues to push the guy who's now off his feet into the path of the opposition scrum half. And you've given the ref no opportunity to be on your side. He's got no opportunity. He just goes, right, penalty Newcastle.
Yeah, it's frustrating. You must be so frustrated when you see just silly, mindless penalties like that cost your team.
Yeah, go on.
Gloucester. So, Lloyd Evans, what do you make of him?
Good.
I'm so conflicted. And I think this came out. Austin Healey was talking about this in comms. He has some beautiful touches. I mean, his pass to Chris Harris for Lewis Rees-Sammet's try, I think it was last weekend, was beautiful. Some of his running is great. He does some great stuff. He is so eager to carry and hit rooks for a 10 that it's going to cause them issues because half the time he's not there controlling his team half the time. And he failed because of that. As a consequence of that, he failed to get the best out of, well, that back line, which having two of the fastest wingers other than Radwan in the league on your wings, but they weren't brought into the game at all. Yeah. Johnny May's only real involvement going forward was his pick and go try.
Of course.
So it's a little bit frustrating. I think he's got a lot of potential. And this was only his fifth league start. So he's not played a huge amount of rugby. He's got a lot of potential, but he needs to learn quick.
Well, okay, so I'm going to go way back on this one. Do you remember Yestyn Harris having his first start for Wales at 10?
So when he just converted?
Yeah.
Was this?
Yes.
I think I do. And he wasn't very good, I seem to remember.
No, so he's got all the talent, Yestyn Harris.
Yeah.
And one of the knocks on him was that the Wales team didn't let him have enough responsibility to run the game. Instead, they were stepping in. Stephen Jones might have played 12 or 15, and he was stepping into first receiver. Everyone was trying to help him out when actually they should have just left him to it. And I've forgotten his name now. Lloyd Evans is in a situation where he's got really senior guys everywhere, whether it be 12 Trees or Harris or Atkinson, who are all there to help him out. And I think your point that he's not controlling the game too well, he might just feel that little bit of freedom because he's got that security blanket. Maybe they need to just trust him a bit more.
Well, but if you go trust in the process for Gloucester should be everything about what we do is to engineer space for Johnny May and Lewis Rees-Hamm. That's it.
And Ollie Thorley.
That's the whole... And Ollie Thorley. That is the entire process, the whole point. It's the same. Bristol do it. Their entire game plan is to get Semi Randrandra and Charles Piatow in space.
Yeah.
That's it. And everything the whole team does is geared around that.
And do you know what's wonderful? To get those lads in space, you've got to get lads like Chris Harris into traffic. And he loves going into traffic. Yeah. Like, they've got a really nicely balanced team to get it done.
Yeah, so Lloyd Evans has got two big and skillful centres outside him to bust a hole and then to, exactly as Phil said, get himself back in a position to exploit any space that might be open for the guys like those. And I think you're absolutely on the money, Phil. He's not... And I think I would tie this together with... what you said about them giving away brain dead penalties—it's they're not being streetwise.
No, they're really not. But they're panicky, aren't they? They're just a little bit flustered and they're making bad decisions. Whereas a winning team wouldn't do that because they're not grasping at every opportunity. You know, they're not trying to win the game there and then.
I think if you just said to Lloyd Evans, don't take the ball. Generally speaking. Don't take the ball in. Make sure you're always able to pull strings because you're the eyes.
Yeah. Mm.
I think that would change his performance completely.
It's a change. That's it is that simple because there's just so many times where he's carrying and or hitting rooks, which seems amazing. Like the number of times I counted him hitting rooks, which virtually no other fly half will ever do because you're clearing out ball. For yourself, it should be you dealing with the ball after that.
Yeah, it'd be quite impressive if you can clear the ruck and get in position. there is one other element of this which I do like about him, which is he's brave. And I think more than ever, you need to be superbly brave as a Premiership 10.
Yeah,
because you've got to take the ball to
the line.
That's
fair. I mean, and like you say, he's got a lot of upside and he's got a lot of talent. The flip side is, if this is going to be their game plan, when Jake Pelledri's back, 10.
Ben Morgan,
he'd be great clearing out rucks and hitting up. Perfect man for the role.
I like it. I like where your head's at. I think Gloucester will be fine. And more to it, I think they're going to get on a run. I really do. If they can keep, I mean, injuries in the Premiership is always a big one. I love their centres, love their back three. I think the fly half is good. They like Chapman. I like Chapman. I think he's a good little player. I think they're going to be all right, you know. I tell you who else I like.
I don't see him going on a run. I think they're...
Two or three games, I can see that. I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
I tell you who the other guy I liked in... At times, it was not a complete performance by any stretch, is their Argentine lock. He looks more lockish.
Alamano, or whatever it is. Yeah.
Like when you've got Slater and Garvey, you've got two guys who are pretty similar. You know, bruisers, wise Premiership heads. But being honest, they're not the athletic line-out type. This guy looks like that. I thought he had some great interventions to start with. Faded out of the game a bit, but he's a nice option for them.
Mm. Yeah.
Go on, Phil.
I think they'll be okay. Depends on your definition of a run. I think more than two consecutive games, just given how competitive the league is, will be tough for them.
Yeah. But well, half the league have only got two wins, haven't they?
One win.
Yeah. So we haven't mentioned, you mentioned briefly Sale? Worcester.
We have not mentioned Sale.
Sale were one of those teams that won, but probably will just take the result rather than the performance.
100%. I did not like this. I did not like how they played one bit. Very, very blunt. Again, it's this cheat code mentality, isn't it? We can beat teams by doing very, very basic stuff, and we don't need to do all the complex hard work. It's a sign of how good they, you know, it's a sign of their strength, but it's also a sign of their weakness. Oh, so philosophical. I didn't like it one bit. They are going to get better. They have to get better, actually, because when they see a competent team, it wouldn't surprise me if they get an absolute hiding from somewhere.
Mm. And then Worcester, you said mentioned a few positive bits, but it's still a disappointing performance from Worcester. They did get the bonus point with pretty much the last play of the game, the penalty try.
Yeah. I mean, any team coming to the AJ Bell going away with a losing bonus point, I mean, they're not going to be ecstatic about it, but it is a hard place to go. I like how they play. I really do. I think when you add Ollie Lawrence into that back line too, they start to look a bit more dangerous. I have heard on Worcester from a pretty good source, I've got to say, Chris Ashton is on his way.
Ooh, I'm not... Well...
That would be remarkable if they went for Van der Merwe and Ashton.
No.
I can't see it. I mean, no. Doohan is... We've been hearing rumours for a while about it, but that seems to be nailed on now. And that coincides with Francois Houhard.
I think Iron Dew was announced, confirmed.
I think that is confirmed. But that coincides with Francois Houhard leaving at the end of the season, because he is. And you made this point. I can't remember. It might have been on a WhatsApp or on Twitter, Jay, that they do have. They've got quite quite a stable base of player. No superstar, or very few superstars, all players on kind of an even keel, and then one or two guys on serious money. And Francois Houhard has been that guy for a few years. Ben Teo was that guy for a few years. Duan van der Merwe is going to appear to be one of those guys for the next couple of years, certainly.
Houhard literally drives a Lamborghini. He literally drives a Lamborghini. Right.
He drives like a... Well, his car is worth probably more than pretty much every other individual player's contract.
No
one else earns more than his car is worth.
Do you think he leases that car? He better do. I mean, that's a money pit as well. That's an awful waste of money.
But even leasing it, like, you're talking thousands a month.
You're a financial advisor, Jay. You need to get on the phone to him. Get yourself a nice Nissan Qashqai where you can put the dog in the back.
Dog, yeah. God knows how much a dog is worth. By the way, can I tell my story one more time about the guy who sells cars to footballers?
Tell me again. I've forgotten.
So I was out with Phil. I was out with Phil. We're on a rooftop bar.
Remember those days?
Obviously.
Oh, what days they were.
By the way, if there's some silver lining to coronavirus, surely open air rooftop bars must be the first ones to come back, right? Follow the science, guys. So we were in one of many rooftop bars which we frequent, and we bumped into a well-known English rugby player who we know. And we sat down for a drink with him, and he's with this guy who must be like late 20s, cap on, quite trendy but youngly dressed, if that makes sense. And I was just like, "So what do you do for a living?" He goes, "Oh, I sell cars." I was like, "Oh, nice. Who do you work for? Dealership, or you know, what is it that you do?" And he goes, "Well, I actually lease cars to footballers." Wow, that's incredible. Like, what's the most expensive car which you've leased? To which he says, well, it's not really about a single car, it's about a package of cars. So he went through a list of guys that he's leasing cars to in the football world, and you're talking four or five cars per player. I'm like, how on earth are you persuading him to take four or five cars? He goes, oh, it's simple. You know, the average family spends about 20% of their disposable income on car repayments. So we take that 20%, we apply it to a footballer's salary, and that's their budget. And then we supply them with whatever they want to put in the budget. Like, that is insane. Actually insane. So I looked at our mutual friend who was drinking with him, and I didn't say it, but I was thinking it. I was like, you need to leave this man straight away. You need to get out of here, and you never need to call. Delete his number. You don't need to know this guy.
Well, I know a couple of the cars that our mutual friend who we were drinking with then drives, including a G63 AMG, which is a lot of money. It's a six-figure car. It's probably not far shy of Hoohard's Lamborghini.
Oh, makes me feel ill.
Pally.
Makes me feel so ill. Yeah, so it seems to be Worcester, for some unknown reason, have unlimited amounts of money for one or two players and then no money whatsoever for everybody else. And I don't
exactly
know what kind of squad building logic this is, but it's, I mean, surely you just spread the Hoohard money evenly across your locks.
I'm just listening to that thinking, my God, what? I'm so glad I've never cared about cars. Because it is, yeah, we've got my end of the financial year for my business coming up soon, and my...
Oh, I've got a guy who sells cars.
No. Quite all right. I'm just going to do my pension instead.
Classic cars, mate. Classic.
Boring.
Yeah, if you're gonna buy a car, get lots and lots of classic cars, but then you need somewhere to store them.
Mm.
Bikes, you can store them.
Well, I have a 1963 Vespa.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So Charlton.
Yeah. Haven't had it on the road in forever, but yeah.
Where is it now?
Doesn't matter.
Where is
it? Not sitting on a bloody podcast, am I?
Is it your house?
Come round and steal my Vespa. No, never mind. Anyway, what are the game? So Sale Worcester and Harlequins London Irish. Now, one thing happened in the Irish game, which I just want to mention, because this is a little bugbear of mine. When is advantage over, or when can be advantage over? And I'm not talking about the length of time it takes, like 30, 40 seconds or a minute and a half. I'm not even talking about that. But there was an example where Ollie Hoskins, London Irish prop, had a try disallowed because he lost control of the ball.
Although I don't think he did.
Yeah, I possibly thought it might have been a try. Nevertheless, ref gave it as a knock-on. But he's knocked the ball on in the act of scoring a try, and he went back 25 metres for a penalty. It's like, if it's not an advantage to be over a try line and all you have to do is place a ball down, how much more advantage can you give?
Good question, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great point. That should have been... I would have been happy for it to be given as a try, actually. But given that it's given as a knock-on, it really, really should have been a scrum Harlequins on their 5-metre line.
Where was the penalty?
Just outside the 22. But that's irrelevant. It's kind of irrelevant.
I don't think it is irrelevant, because if it was in the 5-metre, like if...
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, that to me... The advantage has to be a try. You've got to score a try. If it's outside of the 22 and you've advanced it to the 5-metre...
And got the ball...
Over the line.
Over the line. And it was brilliant. I'm just trying to find the person who put this perfectly, but it's just something... on the flip side, I think the Gloucester-Newcastle game, I think Gloucester had a penalty advantage when Alex Craig had the ball on the 5-metre line to give a try-scoring pass, and Radwan intercepted it and scored, and that was the ref went, there you go, well, you've had your advantage
over.
But someone put it brilliantly in one of the replies earlier. Where are they saying? I can't remember. I can't find the game. But they basically said it should be like the inverse of a penalty try. So with a penalty try, you say, were they likely to score? Yes, therefore I'm giving a penalty try. It should be the same. Were they likely to score? Yes, therefore advantage over.
Yes, like that.
It's quite a good way of thinking of it, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, particularly how far the advantage was played for and how far back the penalty mark was given. That makes sense to me. Mm. It's a tricky one, because I strongly believe that refs should be able to use discretion here. Because you do have to have a real good feel for the game as to when advantage is over and when it's not. That's why I said, where was the penalty given? And it'd be very hard to sort of codify different areas of the field and how long it goes and what the result would be for the advantage to be given. And if a referee's got a style that he gives a slightly longer advantage...
Yeah, that's fine.
That's fine?
Yeah, I get that. And so I agree. I don't want to have like a three phases only or 20 seconds and you can't go back. That's fine. But it's just on that one, I thought, how can advantage not be over? So it's just one little small thing. And... I've completely brain farted what I was going to say. Never mind.
What about crossfield kick? Because crossfield kicks are the one that everybody goes for, don't they? If they catch it, advantage. If they don't catch it, it's obviously not advantage. They don't gain advantage. You go back to the penalty.
I'd say it's a similar thing.
But
so
if they did catch it and then went to then ran out the back of the dead ball area because they were silly.
Advantage over.
Advantage over. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. Completely agree.
Yeah, and the other one is one thing I would codify, however, is knock on advantage, and I would just say the second you kick it, advantage over.
I thought that was the rule, though.
No, not always. If someone kicks directly into touch, they'll go back for a scrum quite often. Whereas actually, I'd say if you basically referees shouldn't mitigate for poor skill. Basically, so in Ollie Hoskins or decision making. So Ollie Hoskins losing the ball or a player kicking it into touch. Tough.
Do you know what I don't get is with knock on advantage, you are allowed to ask for it, but it's frowned upon, isn't it? So the ref's playing advantage and the ref wants you to play. That's what they do. They want you to play the game. So if the knock on occurs, you catch the ball and say, "Sir, I'll have a scrum, please." I say, don't ask for it. They hate you asking for it. But actually, I think that's a pretty good way to do it. If you want the scrum, just ask for it. And as soon as it leaves your hands, that's it. You've decided to play the advantage.
That'll be a good one for like a scrum half and a referee to be talking when it's a penalty advantage, just to go, you need to do something with this now, or do you want it, basically?
Yeah, look up and go, yeah, I'm good, thanks, sir.
We'll have the pen.
Yeah. That because it's against rugby ethos, isn't it, to ask for things?
Mm.
So, especially with if you pass a ball from a or kick a ball from a knock on, you have tacitly accepted the advantage. The fact that you have the ball is the advantage.
Did something happen? You just reminded me. Did something happen with Kyle Sinclair? Did he say something to a ref?
You've got to be effing Joe. You can't be effing serious.
Yeah, to Carl Dixon, who obviously used to be teammates with him.
Look, there's so many ways to look at this. First of all, you can't swear at a ref. Second of all, it sounds bad on TV. But on the other hand, if Carl Sinclair thinks that he nearly got kneecapped by a illegal tackle on his £300,000 a year knees, I would be quite angry too. I don't really care either way.
Hold on. I'm just going to draw an equivalence here. Last week, there was massive condemnation of Dan Dupree, with people saying, understandably, mm-hmm. he got a 3-week ban in the end. And for balance, Ed Slater got a 4-week ban.
After you grassed your mate. I'm going to text Ed about that.
But a lot of people, the point people were making about Dan Dupree is he had the opportunity not to, and he should have shown restraint and control. What is the difference in verbal restraint and control from a very experienced player, a British and Irish Lion?
He's a fiery character. He should. I think there's no doubt about it. He should probably not do that. But on the other hand, we do know, don't we, that if you shout enough at refs, they give you stuff. Sometimes it backfires, but most of the time it doesn't. Ask Owen Farrell, ask Dan Bigger. They're always yapping. I don't think Sinclair is particularly good at yapping, and it would help him not to do it. That's a coaching point rather than anything else. I mean, if he got pinged with a penalty, which I would be quite happy to see, I guess he wouldn't do it again, would he?
Yeah, I would have liked to see a penalty. I've seen some people calling for a yellow card, and that just feels a bit extreme, but a penalty feels appropriate in that scenario.
With a warning saying absolutely any more of that, and it's not even a yellow, it's a red.
And you could say, well, I would have given a penalty against Mullet-Dickey for his I'm not even sure what the penalty was against Mullet-Dickey for.
I hated that penalty, by the way.
He did seem to wrap his arms, albeit I understand he was a bit reckless, but as in he was reckless for his own safety, really.
Was that the one where Jack Noll tweeted, it's now you get penalised for tackling too low?
Yes.
Yes.
So can we just go back to that? Because you've just reminded me what I was thinking at the time.
It was a weird situation.
Yeah, so Sinclair's carrying the ball.
Yeah.
And he's probably lowered his head to about maybe not as low as 4 foot. But yeah, you're doing it in that sort of bend.
Degrees at the hips.
It's nearly waist height. Yeah,
nearly waist height. He's really gone low. Now, in order for Mullet-Dickey to be absolutely sure he doesn't make...
I love the fact if anyone is a relatively recent listener of the pod, they'll go, why are they calling him Mullet-Dickey?
Sorry, Luke Cowan.
No, it's fine. I like it. Go back and listen to the back catalogue.
Exactly. Season 8. For him to make that tackle and make sure he does not make any contact with Sinclair's head, he's going to have to go bloody low. And when you go low, well, you've got other issues then, haven't you? Like flailing knees and shins and boots and whatnot. And he put his arms out to attempt the tackle, but he wasn't looking where he was going. So the only way you can make a tackle now, and you think about the window, you know, so if Sinclair's head is 4 foot off the ground, you've probably got a foot where you don't, you know, off the ground yourself where you don't want to be because it's too low. You don't want to be within a foot of the head. So you've got basically a 2 foot box in which you need to dive through to make the tackle on Sinclair, which is exactly what he does. And he, understandably, does not expose his facial features to the onrushing knees of the 20 stone.
He's already lost enough teeth. Come on.
But, like, I'm not putting my teeth. Just the thought. I mean, do you know what? I didn't even think of teeth. I thought about eyes and nose. But now you mention teeth, it makes me feel a bit queasy. You know, I don't know what you expect him to. I think we need to be a lot more lax on these chop tackles. Because.
Where there's an arm.
Yeah.
As in, where there's an attempt to wrap. Because there was an attempt to wrap in this, I think. So I actually would have been okay for it to be, I don't know, a scrum reset, I'd guess. As in, attacking team with the ball retains possession and you just restart the game. In the end, they gave it as a penalty, which I don't have a huge issue.
And
I would have had a real issue.
Did they give the penalty because Sinclair asked Carl Dixon, are you effing serious?
Well, yeah.
Well,
that's a good point.
That's what it could... That probably would have been the most appropriate to say... Cowan Dickey, it was going to be a penalty against you because reasons, but Sinclair, you can't yell at me, a referee, like that. It's a penalty against you.
I think what JB was saying was, did the penalty only go against Luke Cowan Dickey? Funnily enough, because Carl Sinclair put a bit of pressure on him to do so.
Because I think that's exactly what happened. And actually, if that's the case, Carl Sinclair's completely justified to shout it and he should do it more often.
I don't think that was the case. I think they were going to look at it because kind of half the team stopped. It was one of those moments where you're like, oh, that's pretty... Because Sinclair like flew up into the air, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yes, he
did. It was pretty startling for everyone involved, I think.
Was it Sinclair taking evasive action, basically?
I think a little bit, yeah. I think he did... Maybe it should have been two penalties against Sinclair for swearing and for jumping into the tackle.
Yeah, sounds like it.
How do you stop Sinclair? Like, if he's that low, that powerful, that fast, that
good.
This is where
it gets tough, doesn't it? Because he's damned if you do, damned if you don't sometimes. If Luke Cowan Dickey just pivots at the hips and meets Sinclair shoulder to shoulder, then he's liable to get a red card. He's made the effort to go low and he still gets pinged.
Yeah, I'm down with the head injury stuff. I think, you know, we need to avoid it. But you can't penalise him for tackling his knees, his shins. I mean, he's the guy who's taken the risk there, not Kyle Sinclair. He's done everything he can to make sure Kyle Sinclair is not separated from his senses. That's commendable.
The bit I will say was Cowan Dickey was a bit reckless. I don't think he always had control of his body. And I think he was a little bit lucky that he got away with hitting the 1 foot box or 2 foot box that you described before, Jay, because he was a little bit out of control. But when you're out of control and you don't hit the head, then it's not.
What's the problem?
I don't think it's an offence.
Well, I don't know what the coaching point is. You've talked a lot in the past about coaching points. I don't know what the coaching point would be for that.
He can't go lower.
Just don't bother tackling him.
More control. As in, Cowan Dickey did fly in, and he could have easily been a missed tackle. It could have easily hit his head, but Cowan Dickey had less control. So a little bit less pace to it would be my coaching point to go for.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's
harder hits, more collisions, more pace. That's what I would... if he did it faster, no one would have noticed.
if Kyle Sinclair had flown any further in the air, a few people might have noticed.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, who is Tom Parton?
Another young Irish
back
three player.
The pace on that lad. How many games has he had?
Not many.
Not many at all.
They've got Stokes, winger. They've got Ollie Hassel Collins. They've got Ben Loader. They've got Theo Brophy Clues, young guy. Phil Cocken, a singer in the just coming through the academy. They've got a lot of good young backs.
Yeah, they have. I'm liking the look of these guys. I mean, some of them. They're a funny team, Irish. aren't they? I mean,
I'll tell you.
Go on.
Just on talent, before you go into that, the other guy who I do like, who I've seen a couple of times now, is the young lock slash back row who came off the bench, Ben Donnell.
Donnell, he's a captain as well, I think. When he starts, he's quite often captain.
Is he?
Yeah.
So he looked good, and he got brought off the bench for a lock ahead of Rob Simmons and ahead of Sean O'Brien.
Rob Simmons started. Didn't he?
No, he came off the bench.
No,
Rob Simmons came off the bench. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was Mahu and Mahu and Maffey.
They were worried about him not having enough running in his legs from not training.
Exactly. Simmons, so a lot goes down, and Simmons wasn't the first come off the rank.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, there's some good stuff happening Irish, but same as everyone, isn't it? Keep them together. You know, I mentioned this on the WhatsApp group, but I still think there's some reason I've never really warmed to Irish. I've realised today it's probably because of the intersection of having to be from London and being Irish simultaneously. It's hell of a gamble to build a supporter base around, and it's pretty exclusive too.
I hear you, but...
Are you from London? No, you can't support this team. Are you Irish in London?
Yeah.
No, you can't support this team.
So London has got 11 million people.
Yep.
Greater London. A very, very small proportion of them are rugby fans.
Yep.
I think what London Irish have identified is that there are quite a lot of people for whom England is not their home nation, who are in London. And of those people, quite a lot of them, proportionately as a percentage, quite a lot of them are in the banking and financial sector, for example, and are more likely to be rugby fans. And if you can tap into that little diaspora, that little
great
group,
word.
there is quite a fruitful vein of potential fans, not just Irish, because one of the things they've been doing, they have on the back of their neck, it says Exile Nation, and I've been to the training ground and spoken to Declan Kidney, and they're very keen to market themselves as the home for exiles. So yes, Irish. But also, if you're in London, but you're from Australia, if you're in London, but you're from... We are a hodgepodge of all people for whom this isn't our homeland. You've got a home here in Brentford. Come along. And they're trying to tap into that.
It's a very nice thought. I love the idea. It's not like a barbarians away from
exactly.
home type of thing.
Exactly.
Problem is, they've already set the precedent, haven't they? So if you're Welsh, you go to London Welsh. If you're Scottish, like the Thistle Boys, they love London Scottish. So I don't know. I'd love to know who the first team was who set this. Oh, by the way, me and Phil, you haven't met him, but me and Phil have. I've met the founder of London Cornish.
Yeah,
love it.
Very enjoyable. We've been on his yacht.
How we live?
What?
Unbelievable.
What?
This is without BT money. This is just like normal everyday life. When it was yacht.
I'm trying to think of the other team. London Nigerians are in like London and South West One or something like that.
Yeah, they play against Old Who is it, Phil?
Old Verulanians.
Old Verulanians, yeah. They're in that league. Or they're around that. I think Bank of England are in that league too.
But anyway, that's London Irish's thought, is that it's a home for waifs and strays, basically. You'll have a seat at the table in Brentford and then your stadium.
Maybe there's another way to market that, because to me it does sound like you have to be Irish and from London. I don't know, London Exiles.
Exiles, yeah.
Just Exiles. Mind you, they are actually called the Exiles, aren't they?
Yeah. That's kind of nickname, isn't it?
So I'd push the Exiles a bit. Maybe get rid of the green and the Irish paraphernalia too. But you can't go too far, can you?
Well, hold on. When we are able to party again, that one day alone in March where they pack out their stadium and sell world records amounts of Guinness, it's a marketing dream.
And also, let's be very honest about this. If they weren't called London Irish, would we be able to go to the Irish consulate in New York to have free Guinness?
London Irish got us into the Irish consulate in New York.
Exactly.
That was a great night.
So maybe London Irish is exactly the right way to go for us.
Well, people in England understand, in terms of branding, when you think of Ireland and rugby, you just think...
Father Ted.
So much beer. So much Guinness. Yeah. So it does the job for them.
Perfect. Ideal. I think we've done all the games, right?
We have, yeah. And I do you know what? I'm going to make a call and say we don't do a preview until we know what's going on. We could always do a quick preview later in the week.
Yeah, if it happens, we can get back on the mics, can't we? There's no No problems there.
Yeah. Got nothing else to do.
No, nothing.
Just interrupt another episode of me watching Peep Show again.
Are you watching Peep?
I'm going round it again. It's so good.
Do you know who the biggest fan of Peep Show is?
Who's the biggest fan of Peep
Charlie Morgan, Telegraph.
Really?
Have you not noticed that on his Twitter?
No.
Lots of Peep Show references. Loves Peep Show.
I love Peep Show.
It
so
is good,
good,
isn't it?
It might be my favourite show.
It's up there.
It's so, so good. I'll tell you what I'm watching at the moment, re-watching, though I've not watched it for the best part of 10 years, is Parks and Recreation.
Oh, that's so good. I watched that earlier this year. Oh, my God, that's funny.
So I don't
It's a great show.
I don't know if I'm being a bit too counterculture here, but I'm just not into box sets or Netflix
JB,
or anything at
stop,
the moment.
Stop, stop. Your spirit... Not spirit animal, but your spirit human.
I know the guy you mean.
Is Ron Swanson.
Ron Swanson.
Yes.
I have seen it.
When I watch him, I've said before, my God, JB would love this.
No, I've seen series one.
My advice would be skip season one. Because it's not that it's bad, but in season one, the main character is kind of... Leslie Knope. She's stupid and incompetent, whereas in season two, her character changes and it's so much better.
Ah, interesting.
So skip season one, Parks and Rec, start season two, and you'll love it. And Ron Swanson is one of the greatest TV characters.
Yeah.
It's not that, Tim. It's that I think that if I get into Netflix, I'm giving in to government manipulation to subvert me by watching Netflix.
It's on Amazon.
Or Amazon, or any streaming service. They've pacified me.
Yeah.
I should actually be doing nothing except for sitting in a dark room getting angry on Twitter.
In my stocking.
That's what I should be doing.
In my stocking for Christmas, I got a T-shirt. Father Christmas brought me a T-shirt which says on it, I use it as my night, my bedtime, my PJs, a Ron Swanson quote, which is, my will and testament is, I can't remember exactly what he says, but basically it's all my worldly possessions should be given to the human or animal who kills me.
I quite like that.
Yeah.
I think quite. Yeah, so I'm not getting into any boxes. And besides, every box that I've watched recently or tried to get into recently, they're all broadly along the same lines. I mean, there's some comedies which are very good, but all the serious stuff, it's all broadly the same stuff. It all ends up with a murder or some organised crime something. I feel like I've watched them all now.
Well, that's the only silver lining with the extra lockdown is I feel like I wasted the opportunity to watch some of the classics that I never watched. So in the first lockdown, I watched The Wire. Amazing.
And that is amazing. Mm-hmm. But once you've done that TV's good. Done then.
Sopranos, everyone tells me, is awesome. I've never watched it.
I have to say, having seen the whole thing very, very quickly, all over one Christmas, literally... over 4 weeks in Christmas. Yeah, it's all right. It's not... I don't think it's as good as The Wire. I think it's massively overrated, actually.
Okay.
I like both of those, actually. I don't know, Sopranos, I kind of watched it when I was pretty young, when it was on Channel 4, and then re-watched it a little bit older. And it was... I don't know, there's something... Because I watched it when I was a kid, but I only ever dipped in and out of episodes rather than like watching it consistently. There was always something comforting about going back to it. It kind of, I don't know, it just, I always like The Sopranos in both guises of watching.
South Park is incredibly therapeutic.
So good.
Yeah,
it's South Park so is good. Unbelievably good.
I can't believe they can make it. I literally can't believe that they can make it.
Yeah, it's great. Then there's an episode for anything that might be annoying you in the world. There's an episode that will just be cathartic. Like the like woke principal guy episode brilliant.
I don't know why it was not particularly related to anything social, or maybe it kind of was, I don't know, but the dolphin plasty episode.
Oh yes.
I couldn't stop crying.
That was amazing. So good. Anyway. Oh, the other one is, so yeah, just quick, if you've never watched True Detective, watch True Detective season one. I then watched True Detective season two thinking I was really excited and it was so bad.
It's so bad.
And I've recently been Vince Vaughn cannot be a bad guy.
No,
that does not work. And Colin Farrell was awful as well,
the whole thing, and so many weird plot twists that went nowhere.
But as a result, I never bothered watching True Detective season three, but I've heard that's actually really good.
I've heard that as well,
so I'm gonna watch that anyway. Sell it. Well, instead of matches, just in case there's no matches.
Hey, do you know where they're producing the best new content?
Egg Chasers feed.
I was going to say Prem Rugby every week. So that is basically...
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah, that is that. Rugby is the only place that you can get fresh new content every week with a different storyline. And that's why we should embrace it.
100%. And what a great week of rugby it was, except for very quick mention at the end, Ulster losing to Leinster, but there you go.
I thought you weren't going to mention it, Tim.
Sorry, I had to get it in there at the end, Phil. Sorry, mate.
Mm. Terrible. Didn't even score a try.
The unbeaten run is done.
Dead.
Where can everyone find us?
You can find him at Jay Beardmore. You can slide into his DMs with offers of kit or whatever else you want. I'm at Cocker. We're at Rugby Podcast. We don't ask for anything, so all we ask is you hit subscribe and then you get every episode in your feed and you just tell someone. You know,
tell anyone.
Tell everyone. But people are having a tough time at the minute. You know, let them know the joy that could be in their life. as we bring you a podcast 52 weeks of the year. Thank you very much for listening. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.